Is this live or are you going to edit it?
Yeah, I'm going to edit it, so don't
Good.
worry.
Don't worry, you can say some very cute things to us.
I never worry.
She's eating sausages with schnitzel while wearing a dirndl.
A dirndl.
Dirndl.
She's wearing a dirndl. Didn't you say dirndl?
What the hell is that?
Barbarian king.
And drinking buckets of delicious beer surrounded by the crowd of laughing Germans during a secret festival that is Oktoberfest. She drives a BMW shouting, Ich bin ein Berliner. She's punctual, dependable, and serious. And more than that, she loves everything that's connected with Germany and German. She is the apple of my eye, Asia. And accompanying her is another girl impartial to this beautiful country, Deutschland über alles, Landisch. Ooh. And here, for you today, only with us, we have a real 100% proven German. And not only German, a real chef de cuisine, Matthias. As we have this girly podcast, I think that we have to start with the one and only, the beautiful, the Iron Chancellor, Angela Merkel.
Wait, wait, oh, really? How do you pronounce her last name in
Merkel.
German?
Merkel.
Meine hübsche Merkel.
I have found some fun facts about her.
Oh, but let me tell you this, all facts about her are fun facts.
Merkel is the first former citizen of the German Democratic Republic to lead the United Germany, and the first woman to lead Germany since it became a modern nation state in 1871. She is one of her country's most beloved politicians, enjoying high personal approval ratings. Do you agree with that, Matthias?
Yes, okay.
She's a former physicist.
Uh-huh.
Angela Merkel has a Barbie doll made after her.
I didn't know that.
Asked once in an interview how she would spend 3 spare days if she could do anything she wanted. She said she would tidy her apartment, putting her book collection in order.
That is something typical to say if they ask you. Just to show, you know, I'm one of you. You know, it's just, I'm just like you. I don't
have
time to tidy up my apartment and
books.
To put my books in order. That's, yeah, okay, but she's right.
It's a typical politician talk then. In hope of preventing communist East Germany's secret police from listening to their telephone conversations, Merkel's family sometimes put a metal fork next to a receiver, a method whose effectiveness she says she always doubted. Having grown up in communist East Germany, where Russian was taught as a first foreign language, Merkel speaks good Russian as well as English. There's a fun fact about Putin and Merkel. Putin has a black Labrador.
It sounds very intriguing. Putin. Is there something we don't know? I guess the effectiveness of putting a metal fork next to the receiver had to be doubted, as you know something about Putin and Merkel. Okay, go ahead.
Putin has a black Labrador retriever named Coney, who may or may not have been named after former US Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Coney often attends staff meetings with him and is usually present when Putin greets world leaders. Angela Merkel has an apparent fear of dogs from when she was bitten as a young girl. Putin was aware of it, and during discussions with Merkel, it's believed that Putin tried to gain a psychological edge by bringing Coney, who's visibly unnerved her. Now, let's proceed with fun facts about Germany. Germans are the second largest beer consumers in the world, after the Irish, of course. Beer is officially considered a food in Bavaria.
Yeah, but okay, that's always the question. Are we talking about Germany or Bavaria? It contains alcohol, but the Bavarians, they will always tell you it's like basic nutrition.
There are over 1,000 kinds of sausages in Germany.
Yeah, sure.
You would have to try one kind of German bread per day for almost a whole year to be able to test them all. There are over 300 different kinds of bread in Germany.
Certainly true.
There are 35 dialects of the German language.
More. Maybe 35 major dialects and a lot of kind of sub kind of related dialects. It's a lot. I mean, you travel like 25 kilometers and you have a slightly different dialect. If I go to Bavaria, to a village or to the very north or to certain areas in Germany and they speak their local dialect, I don't have a chance to understand anything.
But does it mean that every German speaks at least two dialects, Hochdeutsch and their local dialect?
It depends on the level of education that they have. Because at school, they are supposed to speak the Hochdeutsch. And there are certain areas like around Hanover, you know, where they do not have a dialect. So they speak the cleanest German that you can imagine. But it's just dialects. It's not different languages. So they are not kind of bilingual. And in the cities, they speak less than in the countryside. But there are certain areas like, let's say, Bavaria or Baden-Württemberg in the villages, you know, they speak only their dialect and they can understand German, Hochdeutsch, because they have it on TV. But they just speak the dialect. And it sounds funny if they try to speak Hochdeutsch.
65% of the Autobahn, the highway in Germany, has no speed limit.
Not true. I think it's only about 5 left. That's the fairy tale about the German Autobahn.
What is the speed limit?
Usually it's 130. The 130 is also like a recommended speed at times, you know, where there is no official speed limit.
When JFK visited Berlin, he famously said, "Ich bin ein Berliner," which also translates to, "I'm a jelly donut."
No, it doesn't. There is a certain jelly donut, type of donut, which is called the Berliner Pfannkuchen, which is called Berliner in all over Germany, but in Berlin we call it just Pfannkuchen. Thank God he didn't go to Hamburg, you know, and he said, "Ich bin ein Hamburger," yeah, or to Frankfurt, "I'm Frankfurt." So he didn't say and he didn't mean that he is a jelly donut. This is something... Is somebody referring to Eddie Izzard on this point? He didn't say it and he didn't mean it. The context, if you listen to the whole speech, which is one of the greatest speeches ever held, you know, there's no reference to any kind of bakery pastry.
To ask for a beer in a pub, you would use your thumb to indicate one rather than your index finger. The reference was made also in the film The Inglourious Basterds. Is that true?
Basically, you can use, out of the 10 fingers you have, you can use 8 of them. Usually it's a thumb, yes. And the waiter would show his thumb, you know, to show you that he understood.
Germans answer the phone with their surname instead of hello.
I love that.
Yes, in most cases, yes.
And dogs are treated like kings. They can go anywhere. They even have their own pools.
Hello, stop packing your suitcase. Oh my God, what? She's made up her mind.
Yeah, Germans love their dogs. I mean, they cannot go anywhere and you have to clean up after, you know, they drop something. But usually, yeah, they're treated well.
Ich bin glücklich.
Matthias, tell us a little bit about yourself.
How much time do we have for that question? No, I make it short. I make it brief.
Short.
I make it short. I try to keep the listeners awake. Okay, my name is Matthias. I was born in what used to be the western part of Berlin at that time, because I was born 5 years after the wall was built. I joke around and say I was born on the better side of the city. Yeah, grew up there and very happy childhood and everything. And I have a younger brother and a younger sister. And my parents are still together to that day. Got my education in Berlin and my professional education as well. I started to work as a pastry cook, later as a cook, and yeah, took it from there. With that profession, I was able to work also abroad. I spent a year in the States. I spent 3 years in the Caribbean. I spent now 10 years or even more already in Russia and Ukraine. Right now, I'm working in this wonderful city of Yekaterinburg as the head chef in the Park Inn Hotel here in Yekaterinburg.
So 10 years in Russia, does it mean that you liked Russia more than the Caribbean and the USA?
Definitely, yes.
Yes.
I mean, the USA, that was back in 1890, so that is a long time ago. I liked it. It was California, it was Los Angeles. I mean, you have to like that.
Well, I guess, you have no choice if it was Los Angeles.
Yeah, but the Caribbean, it's funny. You know, whenever I told anybody, "Hey, listen, I've got a new job, I'm going to Jamaica." And everybody was like, "Wow!" To this day, when I tell anybody, "I've been working 3 years in Jamaica," everybody thinks it's just beach and cocktails and reggae music, but it was hell, to be honest. And whenever I told anybody I will go to Russia to work, they were all like, "Are you crazy?" I mean, Jamaica was a good experience and the music was good. That was it.
Do you have it in your blood, this desire for changing location, this wish
no.
for traveling?
No, I don't have it in my blood, but I kind of, through the years, I think I kind of sucked it up and I got hooked on it. The first trip abroad, the 1 year in Los Angeles when I was very, very young, that was like an adventure, but you know, I got hooked on it. You've been traveling yourself, and you know, whenever you see your own homeland from a distance, it opens up your eyes. And that
so you became addicted.
Addicted is maybe a little harsh, but I came to really like it.
Let's speak about your profession. Why did you decide to become a pastry chef?
That decision was made when I was 16 years old. That time, it became just clear that I will not be good enough a student to qualify for higher education, because I was a lazy bastard at that time. And then, okay, what kind of job would you like? nothing where you get too dirty, nothing where you have to wear a tie. So what's left then? Okay, work with food. So I wanted to be a chef, which was difficult at that time in Berlin to find a place, so I opted for pastry chef. Okay, that sounds good, make cakes and stuff. And then before you know it, you're in it, and then you start learning and everything. 3 years later, you got the diploma and you're a pastry chef, and then take it from there.
There are some competitions of chefs, and I noticed that there is French cuisine, there is German cuisine, there is British cuisine, but nothing about Russian cuisine. Is it that not popular?
Popular or not popular, but maybe a tradition of Russian cuisine has not been promoted so much. Every Russian tells me about, you know, his grandmother's cooking, and there is a certain Russian cuisine. Mm-hmm. But for the Russian cuisine, it's hard to compete against the others, like Asians or Italians, for example, because mostly it's kapusta and kartoshki. There is much more in it. I don't know why. Maybe the Soviet Union is to blame again. There have not been these kind of restaurants and hotels, not so many, in Soviet times. So mostly Russian cuisine is really grandmother's cooking now. And I have to be honest, I don't like Russian cuisine myself so much. I like tvorozhniki, I like cabbage myself in many various ways. But for example, I hate dill, ukrop, which the Russians, and I've been working with a lot of Russians in the past 10 years, let's say, which they always overuse. In Moscow, I have had a pizza with ukrop on it. In Uncle Sam's restaurant next to Metro Chisti Prudy, they served like nacho chips, like the Mexican style, and a handful of chopped dill on top. I like the soups. I like Olivier and Solichna, the salads like this, you know, which are not prepared like this in other countries.
What about kvass?
Kvass?
Yes.
No, not really. Mors, yes. Kvass, not really.
Have you ever tried this awful thing called akroshka?
Yes.
Oh, baby.
Which is, why you say awful?
Because I don't understand that. It's like Olivier mixed with kvass.
And then have it like...
It's like someone just threw up and you have to... I mean, I'm sorry, that's what always comes to my mind when I see that.
And that's very interesting. After all these years in Russia and the Ukraine, the past summer, the first time that I saw what that is, I had to admit that I kind of liked it. But the version with no dill. What, you want me to read like Hitler?
Okay, if you call it like that, then yes.
Yes.
I will read it like Goethe. You know, he would have said, das ist fantastisch.
You speak Russian very well. How did you learn it?
The hard way. In the last year, we had like a lot of German tourists in our hotel staying. And I got acquainted with them. I was helping them. So I got in touch with them a lot. The questions they kept asking, they always repeated itself. Like, how much time you've been spending in Russia? And, oh, you speak Russian? So they figured I must be from East Germany. Because in East Germany, they had, like you said, Angela Merkel. She had Russian at school because it was her first foreign language. In the West, we had English first. And I said, no, when I came to Russia first time, I mean, the first time was as a tourist in 93, just for 8 days. But then to work, I came to Russia in the year 2000 with no knowledge of Russian at all, except for Donetsk. Spasiba, piva, that was it.
Which is actually the most
yeah, that's the most important thing. But try to travel on the metropolitan in Moscow if you know only these four words. And you cannot even read. Nowadays, they kind of, you know, try to keep it like bilingual, at least that you can see the transcription of the names of these metro stops. But at that time, there was no way to get orientation in the metro system. We cannot read. At the beginning, we always had like a translator at work. You know, she was doing the translation. We even went out at night because I would have been lost without her. To tell the truth, it was said we're gonna spend like 6 months in Moscow and then we go back. So why bother and learn that difficult language? But whenever I picked up some words or, you know, could say something, you know, it kind of opened doors. You know, people were always so delighted. Oh, he takes the effort. So I took a teacher. 5 months, I spent like twice a week, 90 minutes each. I found out that even in the age of being older than 30 years, you know, you can still pick up a language. And I wanted to do it the decent way. Not like the Italians. I've known Italians who live in Moscow for 6 years and they still speak this kind of ya znayu, ti znayu, on znayu. I just wanted to have it like as good as possible. You know, it is a very tough language, but you know, you really put some effort in it and sit down and do your lessons. McDonald's help, for example. McDonald's help because and if you stand in line and wait for the next cashier to take your order, you can read the menu. In any McDonald's in the world, the first item on the menu is the Big Mac. So that's how I figured out that the B is a B and the difference between the B and the V and the Mechiznack. And just, oh, that's an E. You know, that's how I kind of figured. And when I kind of ordered my first McDonald's order in Russian language, I was proud like, you know, I can't describe even it. When she asked me then, you want to eat here or take it, you know, Subway, I couldn't understand that. But anyway, that was then the next lesson.
You said that you wanted to learn Russian as good as possible. But does it mean that you enjoyed the process of learning or the process of communication? Or are you simply a perfectionist?
No, I'm not a perfectionist, but I enjoyed it. My teacher, Ludmila Ivanovna, she was one of the tough teachers, the old-fashioned kind of...
How old was she?
She was at that time, it was like 10 years ago, she was like 50, 54.
Oh, mm-hmm. So she was not a young girl.
She was really serious. Actually, she was a German teacher in some institute. Kidding aside, you know, homework has to be done. You have to be punctual. You have to have. So I was really kind of pushed by her. And it was fun, to be honest, because whatever I picked up, whatever I learned, I stepped out of her house and I could use it instantly. Mm. That was a lot of fun. And the most fun was I was surprised by myself that I was actually able to pick that up, to learn it. And I didn't know to what extent it will be in the future, but that was fun. It was simply fun. You know, there are so many people who speak Spanish, English, French, and all these languages, but I don't know many of my friends in Germany, for example, who speak Russian, even the East Germans. So that is something kind of extraordinary. So mm-hmm. It was simply, honestly, fun.
And what was the most difficult for you in the Russian language?
I cannot say was, I have to say is. I mean, this is the ending, of course. And the language, as you speak foreign languages yourself, you know, and you also have to get the kind of the feeling for it, for any language. For example, this my favorite Russian answer to questions, for example, "Да нет, наверное." How would you say that? Translated, it doesn't make any sense, you know? So that's a process which is still going on. And I'm happy that I can really understand, I would say, everything. I just took a test not too long ago, and I have like 90% I reached in the test about Russian language. So I'm kind of confident and very grateful that I did it. But the process of learning is still going on.
What was your image of Russia before you moved and started to live here?
Not a good one, of course. I grew up in the western part of Berlin after the Second World War ended. We had the Cold War, and I was growing up next to the Berlin Wall, which was built by the Russians. There was some propaganda that we grew up. And then there was the picture that was being drawn about Russia in the 90s. That was an awful one. Whatever you saw in the news or read in the newspapers about Russia, there was never, ever anything positive. It was about crime and it was about corruption. And then, of course, this kind of fell into the picture you already had, even what your grandparents told you, you know, like when the Russians came to Berlin in 45. Ooh, mm-hmm. You know, so the whole picture, the sound of Russian language to me was just awful. And then when I came to Russia in 93 for the first time, I could see it myself for the first time. And I had to realize it's not even so far away. When I grew up, Russia was on the Soviet Union that was next to the moon somewhere, so far and not reachable. But the reputation in the year 2000 was bad. Not personally, only to me, it was bad wherever you went. Bleistift.
I have this question about the Berlin Wall. I can understand what the Eastern Germans felt when the wall fell. What did the Western Germans think about it?
Same thing. I have to admit right away that when it happened, I was in California. I left Berlin at the end of October in 1989. So, and I came back just a year late. But anyway, of course, I know what people thought and felt at that time in any part of the country. To the West Germans, of course, it was unbelievable at the beginning. I was asked on November 4th, I was at work in LA, and our chief engineer, he was watching it on the news, something is going to happen, and he was convinced, like everybody else, soon they're going to open the wall. On November 4th, so that was 5 days before it happened. And I told him, I tried to calm him down, I said, hey, listen, you know, it is not going to happen. You know, because that wall to me was, it was made of concrete, and I could not even imagine the wall to be open. So when it all happened, not only me, most West Germans, especially the people from West Berlin, that was a huge gift of history. How to proceed then and how to use this opportunity and to form this new kind of reunited Germany, that was a totally different question, and there were a lot of problems to come up, and we had to deal with them later. In the moment it happened, it was just pure joy for the 99% of the population, certainly. You guys are watching too many Vienna movies, you know, like...
Modern Germans, what do you think about Russian people?
You mean Germans who live in Germany and have never been here? One stereotype is what I hear. have a different picture than most people in Germany who have never been to Russia. But some of them have seen Russians in resorts in Turkey or in Egypt. So, and these people do not really help to give the country a better reputation.
Yeah.
Russians should drink too much and too often. And that is something that I was thinking before I ever came to Russia. And that is something that I kind of have to confirm. I mean, look at the average life expectancy of male Russians is still 59 years. Not only because of alcohol, but that's certainly one reason. People still do not know enough, but whoever came to Russia, whenever I talked to these tourists last year who came to Yekaterinburg, which is not a spectacular city, to be honest, compared to Petersburg, Moscow, or Kazan, they were all impressed by the city. It is nice. It is okay. It is not too small and not too big. It has everything that the city has to have, but it's not spectacular. You know, we have a few sites, which is some churches, some, wow. But it's not like St. Pete or Kazan or Moscow. And most tourists come here with this. You can feel that they have this kind of bad picture of Russia, but they are willing to correct it. And whenever they see friendly people and they have, you know, food and see some old churches, and they always like it, most of them.
What do you feel about the Russian people? Are they different from Germans?
Yes, I would say so. But not so much as you. You know, we are still from the same hemisphere. You know, it's not too far. The character, the mentality, there are differences, but it's not like, you know, between Caribbeans and Western Europeans. When you look at the history of Russia of just the last 100 years, then a lot of things become easier to understand. It's just a slightly differences in mentality. Certainly there are, in both ways, in negative and positive.
I have a teacher who lives in Belgium, and once we talked about the Europeans, about France and Belgium, and we noticed that, for example, in France, I don't know about Germany, I have never been to Germany, but in France, they, especially in Paris, they always talk about money. Whenever you hear a person, for example, if you sit in a cafe, everyone around you speaks about money. You know that Depardieu became the Russian citizen. There is another guy who moved to Russia somewhere in province, and he said that here people do not speak about money. They have different things to talk about. Is it true about Germany as well?
In Germany, at least, let's say they do not talk about their salaries compared to Americans, who tell you on the first day of your, you know, whenever you meet them, you will, at the end of the talk, you will know how much he's making. In Germany, that is a kind of taboo. Economic things are certainly an issue to talk about, or prices about of food or of other things. I wouldn't say that they constantly talk about money. I also hear my colleagues at work speaking about money, which they would like to have, or which they do not have, or which they spend on some vacation or on their car, on whatever. The Germans don't speak more about money, not more or less than Russians, I would say. Ich bin so glücklich.
What is the most surprising thing you encountered during your life in Russia?
For me, as a German who was born 20 years after the war, whenever I went in my young years to Holland or to France, there was still this kind of feeling towards even me as a young German that I have to feel guilty. And so the biggest surprise to me when I came to Russia was because I was expecting it to be worse in Russia, because, you know, Russia, along with Poland, you know, they have suffered the most from that war that we started. And so I was expecting, ooh, that must be even tougher now. But no, the surprise was that the Russians can make a distinction between guilt and responsibility. That nobody blamed me or had this kind of prejudice about me just because the generation of my grandparents started this war. Even the opposite, you know, the reputation of Germans or Germany was a good one compared to others, you know, compared to how the Russians thought about Americans or mm-hmm. English. So we, as Germans, could walk freely in Moscow, and people like our cars and like our football team and, you know, all these things, our beer and this and that. That was really the biggest surprise of all.
Yeah, and in Holland, was it different?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And last time I was in Holland, it was okay. That was in 82. I was on vacation with a bicycle with my friend, and I just remember, you know, incidents when we were lost, kind of, and I asked an elderly lady at the street, you know, for some direction, you know, just the direction, which way to Amsterdam. First, I ask, of course, excuse me, you speak German? And they all speak German, you know. But I was so kind, and I asked, excuse me, sprechen Sie Deutsch? When she heard that, she just turned around and left. For example, oh, we were watching the final of the Football World Cup in 82 that was the game between Italy and Germany, and we watched that in Holland, in a pub. Me, 16 years old, and the whole pub was cheering, of course, against us. Not necessarily for the Italians, but against the Germans. That was, and we lost. We didn't get beaten up or something. That was all. Regenschirm.
we have those stereotypes about Germans as well. So first of all, they say that you're punctual, efficient, disciplined. But I heard Berliners are different from other Germans. And people even call them the Latin Americans of the Germany. Is that true?
That's nice to hear. I mean, as a Berliner myself, mm-hmm. you know, that is very pleasant to hear. And that certainly is true, because I wouldn't go so far and say that we are kind of, what do you say, the Latin Americans of Germany? No. But if you look at the history of the population of Berlin, it always has been a city where people migrate to. So if the typical Berliner has to have at least two grandparents from Silesia or Western Prussia or Eastern Prussia, you know, from somewhere, as I happen to have, to this day and 100 years ago, we have the highest population of foreigners of any cities in Germany. The spirit of Berlin is a very liberal one. At the same time, Berlin is a city like with how many, like 3.8 or 4 million inhabitants right now, where politically you have every single party that we are having in our parliament has its regions in Berlin. Like you have some very conservative areas, you have some very leftish. You have these socialists, you know, the city has everything, and everybody who's been to Berlin in that city finds everything. And that is the fascination about that city. The gay capital of Germany is certainly mm-hmm. Berlin. There are also negative things. It's also the crime capital. It's everything. Berlin is everything.
Why are there so many Turkish families in Berlin?
We have even more Russian families than Turkish. honestly, but the good thing is, or let's say the astonishing fact is that you do not notice, because the Russians, they kind of...
They blend in.
Yes, and they very soon speak German, and the Turkish, the first Turkish immigrants came in like in the middle of the 60s.
And they still haven't blended.
And they, no, I have met Turkish people who live in Germany for 30 years who don't speak any German. And on the other hand, I have friends who are of Turkish descent, let's say, and they speak German as I do, because they have been born, they're born in Berlin, and they are Germans, they have a passport and everything. But of course, the Turkish population is visible just because they look different. And at the same time, we enjoy their food, we enjoy, no, not their music, but, you know, this kind of culture, it's a completely different culture. And that's why for the Russians, for example, it's easier to blend in than for the Turkish. And they have this kind of pride, and they are Muslims. You know, that's the other
difference.
Ich bin Ausländer, ich spreche nicht gut Deutsch.
You were starting to say that German people do not speak about their salaries, yeah? Is that true that German are very reserved? It takes time for them to open up in comparison with Russian. We have this image of the Russian who will tell you his life story at the first encounter.
It is a major difference. That is one of the nice things in Russia, which sometimes also can be, of course, not so nice. I mean, it's easier to get in touch with people, and it's easier, you know, since I'm a foreigner here, people sometimes are even interested even more because they are curious. But I don't want, if I'm waiting at the bus stop for my bus in Petersburg, it happened, I have a scharf of Zenit St. Petersburg, that always meant that I will meet people.
Yeah,
people come to you asking for a cigarette, and then start to talk to you as if you know the guy already. Even people who are not yet drunk, let's say, just regular people. Which sometimes is nice, but sometimes you just want to say, oh, don't bother me, but you don't. Of course, you listen to him, you tell something yourself, but in general, yes, in Germany, it takes much longer to get acquainted and to really get acquainted with people. But once you know them, you will not get rid of them that easy. So it takes a little longer, but then it stays. In Russia, I experience it doesn't take so long to meet people, but they also might forget you easier. Rathaus, what's funny about that one?
You lived in Moscow, in St. Petersburg, now you live in Yekaterinburg. They say that there is a great difference between Russian people who live in the capital and people who live in province, like in smaller cities, outside Moscow and St. Petersburg. Is that true?
Yes, I would say. I heard that about the Moskvichi. I mean, that is certainly a very different species compared to other Russian areas. And I was in Kiev, for example, which is not Russia, but let's, you know, put it. The people over there are already different from Moscow people, and the people in St. Petersburg are also different. Not so cocky, But if you live in Moscow, maybe it comes with it, you know, that you have to be a little more rude, a little more self-confident. And they are very self-confident in Moscow. If you come to the Ural, it's already like a different story. People here are very much more, you know, let's say, relaxed. They don't have this kind of superior attitude, you know, that Moscow people have. I would like to go even further east to see how people in Irkutsk are or in wherever. Sehenswürdigkeiten. Personal space, that is a really interesting issue in Russia. Mm. I guess out of tradition or out of the history, you know, that even in the largest country in the world, you know, they built houses where like a whole family had to live in one room in the Soviet times, you know. And so this kind of what you name the personal space around a person, the individual sphere, let's say, that is something, go here to the supermarket. This kind of pushing and not kind of giving you the individual space that you, even if there is enough space around, in buses. Don't sit next to me if there are like other, you know, buses empty, you know. Don't take the seat that is next to me. Take any other. But that is, I can't really understand.
I saw the photos of you with the firefighters. What was it about?
Oh, yeah. When I was 14, I joined the volunteer fire department in the neighborhood where I was growing up. There was a volunteer fire station, and they had the youth department, let's say, for boys and girls between 12 and 18. And when you're 18, you join the real fire department, but on a volunteer base. And I've been serving there like for 16 years, like a firefighter, like, you know, you're just at home, you have a pager, whenever there's anything, you know, they page you, you have to be at the station within 3 minutes and do regular fire department work, you know, as the regular professional fire departments, so like car accidents, fires. We also were having our own ambulance. So that was just like a hobby with some responsibility, of course, and with a lot of fun, to be honest. I mean, it was a group of 30 volunteers, and our fire department in the area that I grew up with, that used to be a village hundreds of years ago, in 1904, they founded the volunteer fire department, and so there's a certain tradition in it, and it was just great fun. And I'm still a member of that. Yeah, how to say, it was just fun and a hobby. Das ist fantastisch.
You have been in a film.
Oh yeah, in several ones, in several movies.
Oh, even in several.
I know only about one.
No, I was kidding.
Okay, because I believed you. I was about to listen to the list of the films.
To be honest, yes, my filmografia. I've been lending my voice in a Russian movie called Когда Растаял Снег, because it was about the war and they had Russian actors playing Germans, and then they took Germans, but not real actors, people like me, and dubbing, giving our German voice to that actor. So he was then speaking German in that movie. I forgot the name of the actor that I was speaking, but, and then in the final version of the movie, like they do it in most Russian productions, they kind of put a Russian voice over my voice. So you could hear that there's somebody speaking German, but the Russian voice is like, you know, telling you what he's saying. And this Biele Gvardia thing, it was in contact with some agent found me. They were looking for some extras for that movie, and they wanted to have real German. So if you have seen the scene where 11 minutes where you can see me, you know, where we kind of evacuate the Gitmon, all German soldiers that you see are real German.
But you didn't say anything.
So I didn't get the point. First of all, they told me that there might be a chance that I will have like a few lines to say. And I was even practicing the text already. When I saw Snezhgin, I thought, oh, maybe it's better that I shut up here. Because he, as a regisseur, as a director of the movie, he was really tough. I mean, I was really frightened to see him. And he was shouting at there were real actors on the set, you know, and he was, you know, screaming at the real actors, at people like Shakurov, that I thought, hey, what the hell, you know, if I screw up something here, you're gonna kill me, you know. So I was kind of happy that I didn't have anything to say then. Just stand straight. And I've never served in the army, you know. And that was one of his first questions. Hey, come here. Did you ever serve in the army? And I said, not really. And he said, the Vidna, you know. So we had to practice and march first before we could shoot it.
Once again, thank you very much for joining us.
You.
I am sure that it is not going to be the last podcast with you. Matthias?
He's already gone.
All right. Matthias has left the building.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, I will hear you. Ist mein Herz gerade noch frei?
favorite Russian word, by the way, is осторожно. Осторожно. But you can also say осторожно!